Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with David French of National Review, who is in for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis today, all of them related to the horrific, horrific, deadly church shooting in Sutherland Springs, Texas on Sunday. 26 people dead, 20 injured in a church of only roughly 50 people. So virtually anyone who attended church there yesterday at that First Baptist Church in Sutherland Springs is shot, and over half of them dead. We have just come off a press conference here, David, so we're trying to process the information as it comes to us, and we'll get to a lot of that as we go along here in the Three Martini Lunch. But there is a good part here, and that is the heroism of people in that local community. This happened at about 11:30 a.m. local time, that's central time, on Sunday morning. And this suspect, 26-year-old Devin Kelly, goes in there with three different weapons. One was a rifle, two handguns, and as we just said, killed 26, injured 20. On his way out of the church, he is confronted by a member of the community. His name is Stephen Williford. He's a local plumber. He's not in law enforcement, but he knows what he's doing around firearms, and he exchanged gunfire with the killer, and the killer ultimately dropped his gun and ran away. And then Williford flagged down another guy who was just happening to drive through the area, a guy named Johnny Langendorf, who told his story to the local news.
He explained very quickly what happened, and he got in the truck, and I knew that it was just time to...
It was time to go.
Yes, sir.
All right, so tell me about that. Tell me about following this guy. Was it high speed? Was he driving normally all over the place? What was it like?
No, sir. He got a little bit of a jump on us, and so we were doing about 95 down 539, going around traffic and everything. And eventually, he came to kind of a slowdown, and after that, we got within just a few feet of him, and then he got off the road.
How did that happen? Did you guys bump him, or did he lose control by himself?
He just lost control, and then that's whenever I put the vehicle in park, because I was still on the phone with dispatch, and the other gentleman jumped out and had his rifle drawn on him, and he didn't move after that.
And so the suspect is dead. They believe it was a self-inflicted wound. David, these guys are obviously heroes. The only way this could have been better, obviously, is if Stephen Williford had his weapon and been in the church and hopefully saved even more lives here. But to watch people just selflessly put themselves at risk to save their neighbors is not only noteworthy, it is extremely honorable.
Right. I mean, one of the things that we see all the time in these mass shootings are people sacrificing themselves, sometimes throwing their bodies in front of bullets to save loved ones. When you see this great evil, we're always seeing great good rise to meet it. In this case, we once again saw great good rise to meet great evil. And in this case, that good stopped what could have possibly been an even more horrific incident. But, you know, one thing I would note is, you know, it's absolutely true here. It certainly seems to be true from all the reporting that a good guy with a gun stopped a bad guy with a gun, and that's usually the way these things end. But the bad guy with the gun still was able to commit a massacre. We've got a problem here in this country that doesn't have any easy or clear or readily apparent answers. And I'm very thankful for those two guys. You know, I pray that if I, God forbid, I was ever in a situation like that, that I would show the same courage. And I think a lot of us pray the same thing, that if God forbid we're in a terrible situation, we would rise to the occasion like they did. And they should be honored for it. Absolutely. But at the same time, you know, we've got a problem on our hands. And we don't have a solution right now. We just flat out don't have a solution. And thank God for courage. I just wish the courage wasn't necessary.
Yeah, and get to know your neighbors. I mean, you take a quick look at Johnny Langendorf when he does that interviews. You know, he doesn't look like the most buttoned up guy. He looks like a local guy in a blue collar area, cowboy hat, tattoos, and he's a guy who absolutely leapt into action, as he mentioned, going 95 down local roads to try and pin this guy down and make sure he didn't harm anyone else. That's a hero, and maybe not the kind you get from central casting, but that's what happens in real life. And so not jumping to conclusions when you see people and get to know people is also a nice takeaway here.
Yeah, he just did a lot for the neck tattoo community, that's for sure.
All right.
he And what a great, I mean, just the way he described it, he was hurting people. I had to do something. I mean, this is the kind of fundamental gut level courage that all of us should aspire to.
I did see the exchange of the gunfire, and then the good Samaritan there, Stephen Wilford, said, "Hey, we got to go get this guy. Let me hop in." And no hesitation whatsoever.
No, it's fantastic.
Just amazing. All right, let's move on to the bad martini aspect. Obviously, the worst part of this is the carnage inside the First Baptist Church in Sutherland Springs. But, David, it's not surprising to anyone at this point that immediately the political talking points come out. The Democrats, on a number of different fronts, and we'll pretty much spend the last two martinis on each of these. One of these on the policy side, one of them on the more spiritual side, if we want to call it that. First of all, of course, the reaction policy-wise is, well, we got to do something about the guns. Some did it directly in their tweets. Some did it a little more subtly, like President Obama. And then, of course, you've got the truly insane and twisted people on Twitter who, you know, these people must be Trump voters. So they actually, you know, weren't that sympathetic to what was happening. But you can't use a few people on Twitter to summarize the whole. But when you look at the narrative that exists on the left that is not true, and then the one that probably is true but was not mentioned, it's kind of aggravating here, because on the gun front, and we just got a little more information on this in the press conference, this shooter, Devin Kelly, got a bad conduct discharge from the U.S. Air Force, so he should not have been able to get a gun, yet he was. And the background check people are saying that this would have solved the problem when it apparently wouldn't have. And then, of course, he comes in and tries to slaughter 50 Christians, killing over half of them. And the idea that this is a guy who's an outspoken atheist, and obviously now a militant atheist, and the idea of Christians being targeted hardly makes the news at all.
Right. I mean, it's really unbelievable how when a outspoken atheist, and again, this is based on all the reporting that we have right now, all of our commentary is based on the best information we have. But the best information we have is that this guy's an outspoken atheist, apparently had a problem in his family, may have been targeting his in-laws. So we don't know if there's a religious motivation or not. But when an outspoken atheist walks into a church and slaughters dozens of Christians, more than 24 Christians, then the answer is not to then mock Christians for praying, for example, or the answer is to not immediately stampede to various discredited gun control proposals. That's one of the things that's the most frustrating about this. All the way back in 2015, Marco Rubio made an argument in the middle of the presidential campaign. Remember when Marco Rubio was presidential candidate? And he said that none of the gun control proposals that are most frequently raised in response to a mass shooting would have stopped any of the recent mass shootings. And Glenn Kessler of the Washington Post fact-checked that and said, you know what? That's true. Not even assault weapons bans, because in previous mass shootings, people had violated state-level assault weapons bans. Closing the gun show loophole wouldn't have stopped it. In this case, it looks like, based on our best evidence, that this guy couldn't lawfully own a weapon. He was convicted of a crime of domestic violence in military court, imprisoned, and given a bad conduct discharge. So it looks like he may have fraudulently obtained his weapons. And then, of course, he violated the laws, the most draconian laws that we can impose in this country, which are laws against murder. So he doesn't care about laws against murder, doesn't care about laws that were prohibiting his weapons possession. And so then the answer is what? More laws that don't actually go to his conduct? It doesn't make any sense.
It's unbelievable. And then, of course, and we've seen this before. We saw this with mass shootings last year, at least, and it's been happening more and more ever since then. And that's that liberals, whether they're the gun control activists or just people who don't want much to do with Christianity or religion in any way, are mocking the people who express their sympathy, their love for the people, and then they say, you are in our thoughts and prayers. And obviously, David, that can be pretty trite. Many of those people may not even be praying at all. They're just feeling for the people who are affected by this. Other people are deeply praying and are absolutely asking for God to comfort and strengthen the people who are the survivors, the people who are injured, and so forth. And then the liberals, of course, because they want to see gun control legislation, or because they think that having faith in the public square is a bad thing, they're not just ignoring it, they mock it. Paul Ryan said yesterday, reports out of Texas are devastating. The people of Sutherland Springs need our prayers right now. And people are basically saying you can stuff your prayers in a sack. Why are you talking about that when you could actually be doing something, as if praying to God is not doing something and not the most effective thing you actually could be doing at any time, much less at a moment like that? So, David, the lack of understanding or the hostility to founding principles, to the way millions, tens upon millions of Americans view their faith in this country is stunning.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And what you have often is really two things going on. Atheists using this as an opportunity to mock Christianity because they believe prayers are about as effectual as asking a flying spaghetti monster for help. So they choose this moment to mock Christianity, often in a way that's theologically ignorant, where they don't know anything about Christianity. And then the other thing is, a lot of times it's just a flat out bad faith way of trying to mock someone for not agreeing with liberal politics. Because what you have here are often people saying, well, faith without works is dead. Okay, well, that's a scriptural principle. Well, what are the works that you're proposing? And then immediately respond with the same discredited, ineffectual gun control policies that we just talked about, you know, 90 seconds ago. Is it really more effective to advocate for closing a irrelevant gun show loophole, say, for example, than it is to appeal to the creator of the universe for insight, for comfort, for courage? I mean, are you serious about that? And the ignorance of scripture is just unbelievable. You know, I just think in times like this, when we are facing a wave of horrible attacks, just horrible attacks, a disproportionate number of the worst mass shootings and mass murders in history have occurred in the last couple of years. And so we've got a problem. And I'm reminded of, you know, 2 Chronicles 7:14, if my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, and I will hear from heaven and I will forgive their sin and I will heal their land. Now, there's a lot of theological argument about, you know, the enduring application of that verse, but that was certainly a promise to the ancient Israelites. And I think it's a sound principle to apply today. And one key part of that principle is pray. Humble yourself, of course. Say, we don't know what to do here. We don't know. We don't have the answers. And so we're going to seek God for answers. And I think that's not only rational, it's probably the most rational and the most effective thing that any given individual can do in response to this. Now, that, of course, that doesn't mean that that's all you do, but I think it's still the most effective thing that you can do is to humble yourself and actually pray. Don't just tweet about praying, but actually pray and seek the healing in our land.
Even with the press conference we just watched, you can see the reaction of people who are part of that disconnect. When the law enforcement officials wrapped up the press conference, they said, we're going to close here in prayer. Fox stayed with it. CNN and MSNBC did not. And they went to their respective panels. And then CNN was just talking about the fact that one of the victims was the 14-year-old daughter of the pastor. The pastor and his wife were actually out of town, so thankfully they're still alive. The visiting pastor unfortunately lost his life. And the CNN reporter was just amazed that a 14-year-old would be at church when her parents were out of town. It's just the idea that you're only there because your parents make you go. It's sad, and they just don't get it.
Well, you know, one of the great joys in life is seeing how your children grow in love for the Lord. And my wife and I just came back from Knoxville this past weekend, where our 18-year-old is a freshman at UT, and one University of Tennessee, the true UT, sorry, University of Texas, folks. But we're just at UT, and one of the great joys was going to her church, the church that she's chosen to attend in Knoxville. And to see your children grow like that and is one of the great and most rewarding aspects of being a parent. And this shock, oh my gosh, a teenager would actually want to be in church? Are you kidding me with that? It shows this incredible ignorance, and it's ignorance often combined with condescension, which is the worst kind of ignorance. And we see that time and time again. But let me just say, I feel more confident and comfortable appealing to the creator of the universe for help in our nation than I certainly do any legislator or president.
Well, that's an excellent point, and it also goes to another aspect of this divide, is where you look for answers and ultimate victory. A lot of people obviously look to the Lord, and a lot of people think government's going to provide it.
Yes, exactly. And especially when you look at these, there's no low-hanging fruit out there, low-hanging legislative fruit to prevent mass murders. I mean, we have seen, you know, when a person is committed to killing, we have seen mass murders through cars, through trucks, through box cutters combined with airplanes, with fertilizer bombs, with guns. We've seen it in so many different ways. I mean, going back to the Las Vegas shooter, if he didn't have bump stocks or if he didn't have semi-automatic weapons, he also was caught with bomb-making materials. I mean, this was a guy with immense financial resources, apparently dedicated to mass murder. He was going to accomplish that. And so that's the problem that we have, is we don't have an answer for a man who's dedicated to committing mass murder. We just flat out don't have that answer. And that's, again, I've said it multiple times already, that's exactly when you appeal to God for help, because you know he can change a human heart. I can't. He can open the eyes of counselors or family members or friends or neighbors that somebody in their community is a problem. I can't do that. You're getting mocked for the most rational and most effective response that any given individual can make to something like this, and that's praying. And you point out it should be actual prayer, not a tweeted statement, but actual prayer is the most effective and rational response.
David, a sobering day on so many different levels. Thanks very much, as always, for your time and your insights.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
David French of National Review in for Jim Garrity today. Jim will be back on Tuesday. David will actually be back with us on Friday later this week. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And please tune in again on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.